Welcome to the Frontline Industry Podcast, where the best of the best executives from around the world share their leadership advice and insights, giving you practical tips and strategies that you can take and immediately implement in your teams and organizations to help you become the leader you want to be. On today's episode, From Pain to Hope, I talk with Charles Rhett, DEI officer for Berkshire Health Systems, the largest employer in Berkshire County, Massachusetts, with over 5,000 employees. Charles describes the adversity and pain he went through as a young man, the power of his faith that led to healing, and how his story impacts the way he leads, treating others with dignity and creating a safe, inclusive environment. Don't go anywhere. The Frontline Industry Podcast starts right now. Welcome to the Frontline Industry Podcast. My name is Joel, and joining me today is Charles Rhett. He's born in Boston, and when he was 5 years old, his father left his family after serving two tours in Vietnam, and then Charles's mother had to raise him and his siblings in inner city Boston when they were just 5, 4, and 2. And that created a lot of struggles for the four of them, but they had an amazing mother, and we'll hear about her today, who worked hard to make every day for them a joy. Later on in life, he became a nurse, and he's been a nurse for the last 29 years. He worked at Bay State Health for 18 in the ICU and cardiac cath lab. He managed a medical floor as well as an ER and behavioral health unit, and worked in long-term care as well as a visiting nurse. In 2021, became the director of quality at Fairview Hospital in Great Barrington. And in 2022, became the first DEI officer for Berkshire Health Systems with a focus on health equity and the health of their overall community. I have been excited for this conversation for several weeks now as we've been going back and forth and finding dates that work for both of us, Charles. And I just can't thank you enough for taking this time. Welcome to the Frontline Industry Podcast, Charles.
Joel, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to have this conversation.
I am too. I know that you had listened to a few podcasts before today, and you even put a very, very kind and well-written blog out this morning about how you were thinking about coming into this podcast, the preparation you had kind of made in your mind for what you were going to talk about and why it was important to you. But one of the things that I have always stressed, and I shared this with you when we first met, is that this podcast is always, the focus has always been finding people who can be authentic with their story and vulnerable. And I think from the very first few moments that we met, I realized just how similar you were in that vein and how passionate you were about similar things. And your story is one of challenges, and your story is one of victories. And I'm sure those challenges and victories still remain part of your life even today. And so I'd love to have you, you know, just give us, let's get the business out of the way and tell us just in a few sentences about Berkshire Health Systems and your job there. And then I'd love just to pivot our time in the remaining portion of today here to talk about your upbringing, the challenges you overcame, and what you're working on now in your life.
So Berkshire Health Systems is the major and the only health system within Berkshire County in Western Massachusetts. And we serve a community of about 130,000 people. So really, it's so important for us to be at our best at all times because we are the primary care provider here in this community. So, very fortunate to have the opportunity to work for a great organization, you know, in the community that I've lived in since 1987.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk to me about health equity then. And as you have kind of tackled this in your community, the focus on health equity and then the health of your community, what does that mean? What does health equity mean? There may be people listening who are like, I don't even grasp what you're trying to say when you mention that.
Yeah, and it is new language, you know. And when we talk about health equity, we're talking about really giving each person an equal opportunity to receive the same amount of care. But it doesn't just mean that I give you equal care. It means that I may have challenges in my life that another person next to me might not. And how do I elevate that person with challenges up so that they're at the same level as the other person and they receive that exact same care? I think sometimes they show that drawing. I don't know if you've ever seen it, where the kids are looking at the baseball game over the fence.
Sure.
And they give them the same, you know, level box to stand on. But one kid is really tall, one kid is medium, one kid's really short. So the kid that's short can't see over the fence. So then what we do is we add boxes to each of the other two kids. So now all three of them can see over the fence. So that's kind of what equity looks like and what equity means. It's really providing that equal opportunity.
Yeah. Well, as much as I'm curious to learn more about Berkshire, I'm more curious to learn about you, Charles. And you shared with me, as we got to know each other a while back, the highlights, perhaps, or maybe just elements of what you called your leadership journey through the dignity lens, your successes, your failures, the lessons you learned along the way. And you actually have a blog. Part of what I mentioned earlier was that blog that you talk about your dignity journey. Could you share what you mean by that? Your journey through the dignity lens. What is that? And what, why is that important to you, Charles?
You know, I really started that journey kind of late in my life. You know, I would say that journey really started for me in 2020. And we all know where we were all in 2020. Really, I had a mentor. A diversity officer was a mentor at Bay State Medical Center who introduced me to this book called Leading with Dignity. It was by Dr. Donna Hicks, who is a professor at Harvard, and she's worked on conflict resolution. She worked shoulder to shoulder with Bishop Desmond Tutu during the Northern Ireland and Ireland conflict. I started reading this book, and it really gave me a lot of insight on where my life was before then and really what I had to do moving forward as a leader. When you're a leader, one of the hardest things is having your staff tell you when you're not leading well. Mm-hmm. You know, to sit in the room and have to listen to that conversation. But the key part of that is not just listening and saying, okay, we're going to fix it, and then we go off and then we continue to do what we're doing. It's taking it to heart what people are telling you and then trying to figure out how can you respond to those things that they're asking you. And the team asked us, they did not have confidence in leadership. I was new to leadership in that role, and they just didn't have confidence in our leadership. So for me, what could I do to fix that? And that's when reading that the book on dignity and talking about what Dr. Hicks talks about, those 10 elements of dignity, when you talk about acceptance of identity, understanding, you know, inclusion, creating a safe environment, you know, righting the wrong and apologizing and acknowledging and understanding. Anyone really, like I said, creating a safe environment. So I wanted to figure out how could I do that with my team and then really to get them to grow in trust. And that's what came out of my dignity post. Mm. And it was a thing I shared just with the team on a weekly basis. Every Friday I would send it to them. And I really shared my journeys and my struggles in life. And I shared, you know, not just everything, things that are great, but also the mistakes and errors that I made. And I opened that door to communication. I opened that door to vulnerability. And it probably was the first time I was ever able to truly be vulnerable with people and really explain what my challenges are, what hurdles I had to jump through as a young man. And then when I did that, also honor those things that they were asking of us as leaders and really have an open and honest communication, you know, not making changes when and not telling them, making them feel like they're valued, making them feel like they're being heard. And I did that through the lens of my own experiences when I didn't have those things or I didn't do those things as a past leader.
Hmm. You mentioned the challenges that you went through as a young man. I'm familiar with a few of them. I mentioned a couple as I did your intro today, but talk to me about that. Let's go back to you as a child, as your father left and your mother took over raising you guys in your back door, right, in your backyard right now. You haven't left the Chicago, or sorry, the Boston area. You're still there. And so you could probably drive a matter of miles and go back to this neighborhood where you were and see the life you used to live. Take us back there with you, to you as a child then, and the challenges that you faced along the way that have made you who you are today, Charles.
Yeah, I don't think you realize what your parents have done for you till you get older. Mm-hmm. And you kind of take a step back. My father left at the asking of my mother.
Okay.
And, you know, my mother understood that, you know, really having my father in the home wasn't going to be the best for the family. You know, it's just a shadow to me. Obviously, I'm much older than five. So, you know, how clear are your memories when you're five? But that memory seemed clear to me that I saw my father in the shadow of my father in the doorway. I saw my mother close the door, and I remember my mother telling me that my father wasn't coming back. I don't know how you take that in as a 5-year-old, and I didn't realize what a detriment that would be to me until I got older. But you know, I had an amazing mother. My first mentor, my first leader, right? That first example of taking on a challenge and saying, I'm going to raise these 3 young men in the heart of Boston when everybody tells me that it's not the right thing to do, but I'm going to do it because it is right for them. And I'm going to lead them and guide them and make sure that they become part of the success, not part of the failures that we say about young Black men in the inner city.
Right.
So, you know, my mother was just, it's hard to talk about it because I lost her so recently, but, you know, just an amazing person. You know, she gave us everything that we needed to be successful. The problem is that I struggled with a lot of things internally. You know, I struggled with depression. I struggled with anxiety. And because of those struggles, I couldn't get my footing, couldn't find my way, couldn't build stable relationships, you know, angry most of the time. And, you know, and I made poor choices as a teenager. When these choices continued into my 20s, I had numerous stays in a psychiatric facility. I was, you know, suicidal much of my teenage years. Didn't feel like my life had value. And that was in spite of everything my mother tried to do to tell me that I did.
Yeah.
And you don't realize what that abandonment can do for you. You know, even at a young age, even when I barely remember who my father was, that abandonment had a significant effect on me. And I think even today still has an effect on me because I just hadn't dealt with having that abandonment.
Let me ask you a question that I don't know if you feel comfortable answering. You don't have to. But as someone who struggles himself, with fear of abandonment, with a father who was present in the home, but we didn't have a close relationship. And for all intents and purposes, I felt like he kind of left us at times. How do you carry that around today? Like, what are the things that you still look around and go, like, you feel the weight of that abandonment? You mentioned that the poor choices you made as a teenager and young adult, but later in life, you know, there's probably people listening right now who had a similar background. And I feel like you are fairly introspective. You've done a lot of work to grow and heal, but what are the scars that you still carry around with you on that?
I think, you know, one of the scars for me, I think, is that, you know, I wasn't always a good father. You know, I wasn't always present. You have this fear that I'm going to be like my father. So you just accept the fact that that's who you're going to be. And my daughter, she was really, really young, but, you know, she had to live through really my bouts of ups and downs of depression. Probably when I was 25, you know, I made, you know, a decision that I didn't want to be on this earth anymore. And, you know, and to really get down deep and dig in and talk about, you know, what was going on with me, it was difficult because I would tell people I could get mad at somebody. If I was mad at you, I could shut down and not talk to you for weeks. You know, that's like abandonment. You know, you're there, but you're not. It's really hard sometimes to think about it. You know, it's hard to talk about it, but I feel it's necessary to speak on it because I know that people are kind of going through those same challenges or maybe even worse. And you hope that your story is something that will generate some hope for somebody else. You know, I had to come to the reality that my father leaving at 5 had a significant effect on my life for a good portion of my life. You know, and to be able to accept that and talk about it really was that start of my road to healing. And, because if I was still that same person, you could have handed me 20 books on dignity and I wouldn't have read them or listened to them or did anything.
What was the thing or series of things or people or whatever in your life that you clung to that were able to pull you out of that, that were able to help move you out of that place of acting out based on that abandonment, acting out based on the feeling of maybe being alone, that you didn't have value in the world? Like, what was is there a catalytic moment for you in your life, or is it a series of moments for you, Charles?
I left Boston in 85, lived somewhere else before I moved to the Berkshires in 87. But when I moved to the Berkshires in 87, from 87 to 89, I cut myself off from my family. I didn't speak to anybody. My mom had finally found out where I was and reached out to me because my youngest brother was getting married. And of course, you're nervous and you go back and you're nervous about it, you know, and my mom opened the door for me like I was never gone. But again, I still had whatever was going on within me was still there. So for the last time I ended up in the hospital wanted to, they had this, psychiatrist coming from Australia, and he wanted to interview somebody, one of the patients. So they asked if I would do it and if my mother would come. Yeah. So my mother got on a train from Lowell all the way to Pittsfield to come and sit down, not knowing what I was going to say, not knowing what this was going to be about, but came because her son asked her to. Mm-hmm. And I think in that moment, I was able to share with my mother what my struggles were. And knowing that in spite of everything I had done prior to that, that my mother still loved her son and would walk the earth barefoot on hot coals for him was really an eye opener for me. It really started to change my thoughts. It's not like in a TV movie where the light comes on for the person and then their life is great after and they never make another mistake.
Yeah.
I still had those things in me, but I at least was talking about them and I at least was trying to move forward to be a better person, to be a better husband, to be a better father, to be a better son and a brother and a friend. You know, I really was working hard to be better. But I think those two instances were key to really changing my focus, I think.
Hmm. I can't imagine a scenario where 25-year-old Charles would look at you now and go, that's who I'm going to be. Like, that's the healing I'm going to experience. That's the family I'm going to have. That's the job I'm going to be in every day. If you could tell that version of yourself something today to save yourself from pain or to transform your healing journey faster, what would you tell that younger version of yourself who is maybe just after that conversation with your mother about to embark on a journey of healing?
You know, I would just really tell myself that there's hope and to stay strong and to work through because, you know, doors are going to open for you if you keep pushing through and doing the right thing, you know, and I'll always have regrets. I go and I ask for forgiveness for those things that I've done that are wrong. And I accept forgiveness for those things that were done to me. But for me, it's really about doors of opportunity are opening for me. And what I do with that opportunity really becomes important. And giving back, it's not about me. You know, it used to be. I had to have that title to prove to everybody that I belonged. You know, I had to have that accolade so to within myself to say, see, you know, here I am. You know, now it's an opportunity to make a difference. Anytime you advance, it's an opportunity to make a difference. Anybody that listens to this podcast and they listen to some of the amazing leaders that you have, they all say the same thing. It's not about them. It's really about what I can do with the knowledge and with the knowledge that I have to help make a difference for other people. And really that has been my drive for the last 10 years was really making a difference in others' lives so that they don't have to go through or experience the things that I experienced.
So take us to today then, Charles, as you are the first DEI officer for Berkshire Health Systems, how does that story of yours, how does that passion of yours to come alongside and comfort others through the story that you had to live out yourself, how does that manifest itself daily for you or weekly or in the meetings you have or the patients that you come across or talk to me about your world now?
This work I'm doing is different than the standard kind of DEI and human resources, that part. It's really the health equity part. It's really the population health part of this role that I really embrace. I'm a nurse by trade. So, you know, that's part of me. Part of my work is building relationships with the community. So when I'm out in with different community organizations, when I'm out on the front lines, when I'm out with people who are experiencing things like homelessness, who are experiencing things like, you know, substance use disorder and really trying to build a life where they can stay sober. You know, when I you know, work with people that can't afford to even buy their meds. When I'm talking to them, I'm talking to the Charles that had those same experiences. You know, to be able to sit down with somebody and understand what they are going through, understand their challenges. You know, it's life altering, and it's amazing because when I'm talking to them and then they, and you know, they see me and they assume that, you know, my life has been this, you know, easy ride, you know, down Main Street. And then they come to understand that I've experienced a lot of the things they experience. I think that gives them hope, you know, and, again, it gives me hope to know that I can, you know, really be a beacon of light, to be a helping hand, and to understand that we're all one step away from being that person. You know, I think carrying that life experience and always having that, I like to say I'm in a leadership position, but I have a front line mindset.
Yeah.
You know, it's always having that mindset and understanding. And as again, as, and I can't remember who said it, one of your podcasts talked about, and I mentioned it in my blog today, is I work for the 4,000 people in this organization. I work for the 130,000 people that live in this community. I am here for them. It's not the other way around. And that is the only way that we can be successful in dealing with the challenges that we face in this county, health-wise and housing, like everybody's experiencing all over this country, is I'm here and I'm working for you. Right? We should be hearing that from our congressmen and our senators and everybody else, mm-hmm. but that's another story.
You've said the word hope a lot today, Charles, and I'm not sure if that is just because of the nature of our conversation or if there's something more to that, but has the word hope for you been kind of the lens through which you look at life then now? You mentioned going back and telling 25-year-old Charles, you know, there's hope. But is that kind of the word that, I don't know, that you orient yourself around now?
Yeah. And it's probably because I've, you know, gotten back to, you know, my faith, going back, you know, to church and really reigniting your faith. It's really been important to me. You know, and that's why I talk about hope. When you, again, I think I still am astonished, surprised sometimes at the opportunities and the doors that have been opened for me. Right. Again, because you have that, you carry that guilt because of the way you lived your life before and maybe the harm you may have caused before. And you often wonder why is this possible? Why am I given this opportunity when I know really, or I know people that live their life to the fullest, they lived their life great, and they didn't get this opportunity, or they left this world way too soon. How? Why me? You know, and I would ask those things in my moments of prayer. I would ask, why me? And really coming to understand. I mean, if you're a person that reads the Bible, and you think about, you know, the person that wrote the majority of New Testament, Paul, wasn't the greatest person before he became that voice. So, and I'm not any stretch of imagination, am I saying that Charles is Paul, but what I'm saying is that, you know, we are given an opportunity and we have to move forward and we have to, again, provide the opportunity for others. We have to be that hope and that beacon of light. And that's why I talk about it all the time. I talk about that, having that hope, even when things are at its worst. I've been homeless before. You know, and people that I never would expect to help me, mm-hmm. right? Strangers helped me. And, you know, and so, you know, it's always about having that hope and really giving back to what you've been given. And that's why I talk about it a lot. And it's really in the eyes of dignity and why I write this post and why I continue to write this blog, which I don't know how far it goes, who reads it, but I do know that I just write it just in the hopes that one person can read a word that I write and that maybe that's the thing that helps them get on the right track.
The way I'm hearing you speak and then you bring your faith into it and then talking about Paul, the apostle, it reminds me of your story and the parallel that you've kind of made to 2 Corinthians 1 and in verses 3 and 4, praise be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our troubles so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves receive from God. I feel like that is a bit of your journey of you've gone through the thick of it. You've gone through tough stuff. And you've been given comfort. You've been given healing and forgiveness and strength to push on. And now you're in a phase of life where now you are turning around and giving comfort to those based on the comfort that you've been given. You've been filled up so that you can be poured out onto those around you. Would that be accurate?
Yes, very accurate. You know, once you get past the ego of things, and I had to work through that. Through my ego, and this is not about you, Charles. It's more than you. It's bigger than you. Once I got past all that and realized really what our purpose is, I was able to really start to move forward. And don't get me wrong, people will give me, will talk about how they appreciated what I wrote, or maybe I did something with somebody and they showed that appreciation. It's great to have that feedback. I'm not saying that, but I'm not doing it because of that. As a nurse, I probably helped lots of people that I never knew that I helped them, because once they leave, I don't see them ever again, right? But it's knowing that in that short amount of time that I'm interacting with someone, I know that I'm going to give them the best of me, because I don't know what doors I'm going to open for them once they leave my care. So, you know, it's just always just striving to give your best to others in hopes of, you know, really giving them the same opportunities that other people blessed you with.
Well, as we kind of come to a bit of an end here, there's so many things we could have talked about. You mentioned to me your journey through dyslexia and overcoming that, your background of education and your grade school experience in the Boston area and the challenges you experienced there. We haven't even touched on those today, and maybe it warrants a future conversation. But if there is one thing that either we talked about before this podcast or that you kind of have been thinking about as we've talked today that I haven't asked you about, that you're really kind of hoping to bring up, is there anything on your mind that's like that, that we could talk about for a few moments before we conclude?
Yeah, you know, in talking about, because I talked about people that have helped me along the way, and in talking about, you know, my dyslexia, I think when I went back to college, you know, my writing, my spelling, and my reading ability was hard. I'm like to the point to where I was embarrassed to read to my child, because wow. I just struggled. And then I had a college professor in the English class, and, you know, he stands in front of the room and tells us what we're going to be doing. I said, it's very hard to get an A from me, he says. Didn't say it was impossible. He said it was hard. And of course, you know, friends and family didn't think I was going to do well or succeed in that class. And he lit a fire in me somehow. And, you know, I was able to work through and overcome some of those challenges I had in learning and reading and writing, to the point where at the end of his class, he had 2 A's in the class and I was one of them. Mm. And not only that, my final paper that I wrote, he held on to that paper for 1 year, turned it into the newspaper, and I got paid $30 for this article that they printed in the newspaper, which again, really had an impact when people read it. They could relate to it. You know, it was about my, you know, I called it Why Was I Born Black? It was really about my experience in trying to live in two different worlds, right? When I was 15, you know, trying to be accepted in the white world and then still trying to be accepted in my own world, in the black world. So, and really what that struggle was for me. So that one instructor opened the door for me to where I am today. If it were not for him, Tim Walters, if it were not for him, I would not be where I am today. He gave me an opportunity to show that I was much smarter than I ever thought I was. And he challenged me. And because of that challenge, here I stand, which is why it took me a long time to figure it out, which is why I want to be a Tim Walter for other people. That's what I want to be. So it's amazing to me when you think back on your life and you kind of look, you see the dark spots of your life, but you see the light and what that light really has meant and done for you, to me, is just something that you want to share. You don't hold it in, right? You want to share that. And that's really what I'm trying to do when I write. Hopefully what I do in talking to you and, you know, hopefully what I do as a diversity officer for this health system, just be that light for others to shine. Hmm.
Well, Charles, as we wrap up, what's something that you believe that everyone else believed too would make this world a better place?
And probably for me, it's really about honoring dignity. And I think we all have the right to be treated, you know, with dignity. And it's much more than just respect, because respect, we earn that. Dignity is something that is given. It's just, you know, it's like I remember when my daughter was born, and that feeling that I had when I was holding her in my arms, right? All my children, that amazing feeling that I had, and I cradled them in my arms. And that was that dignity, giving them dignity, welcome to the world, you know. And I think for me, it's really looking at life and looking at people in that way, and believing that when we treat people with dignity, we can create a better world. Because when we don't honor dignity, a lot of times that's when the fight starts. That's when you know, the division starts. So for me, it's really about creating a world where we honor dignity and we're able to accept each other for who we are. We're able to communicate. We're able to acknowledge. We're able to give feedback, create a place where we can feel safe. And when we make mistakes, we apologize. Mm.
Yeah. The world needs a lot more of that right now. I was just talking to someone in the last 48 hours about the division and the demonization of those who disagree with us, and not arguing or disagreeing with opinions, but putting people in boxes of evil versus good, depending on their viewpoints on maybe, yes, important or divisive topics, but not ones that should mean that we don't interact with them and love them as people and give them the dignity they deserve based on who they are and who they've been created to be. And what a great reminder, Charles, and thank you for that. For those listening, I hope that you have felt the same level of kind of an emotional exhale today on this podcast, hearing Charles' story, and being able to go, oh, thank goodness someone out there has gone through hard stuff too and has come out the other side. Maybe you're listening and you're going through it right now and you're realizing that you're maybe a few steps away from some mental health breakdowns of really feeling alone and isolated and hopeless, and you don't know what you're going to do next, and you're scared of the future. Maybe you're listening and you're on the other side, but you're not sure what value your story has and where it's going to pop up next. And is there value at all? Is it just something you went through? Is it going to be a benefit to anyone? And hope today you've been encouraged that you can comfort others with the same comfort you've been given. And for those who are on the back end of their careers looking to leave a legacy, I think, Charles, you've given us all a encouragement of what this stage of life can be, to come around and rally around others and use your story to help the next generation of leaders become better than they are today. So I can't thank you enough, Charles, for the time you've given. I'm just grateful for this conversation and to get to know you.
Thank you very much, Joel, for having me and giving me the opportunity to speak. And for an amazing podcast that I listen to and really get some value from listening to all those diverse voices. You know, and they're really helping me grow as a leader, because we always have opportunities to learn and grow. And fortunate that, you know, we were able to come together and really help me to grow even more as a leader and as a person. And I appreciate that.
Very kind. And I know that this podcast is usually listened to by a few different types of individuals. A lot of them are executives looking to get encouragement like yourself, and others are aspiring leaders who are kind of looking to the voices out there to give them direction on how they should start their leadership journey. And then there are others who are just, you know, kind of popping in and out here, there. But yeah, I think you've given all of those groups value today, and just like you've received value from others, I know that there are a lot of past and future guests who would listen to this podcast and get healing and encouragement from you. So thanks for giving back to that same community, Charles.
All right. Thank you. Well, for those listening, this has been an emotional and vulnerable and powerful podcast, but I hope that you leave this week better because of it and that you tune in next week for another episode from another powerful voice just like Charles. This has been another episode of the Frontline Industry Podcast, and we'll see you next time. This podcast is proudly sponsored by Atana. If you're looking to create a more inclusive company where everybody feels like they belong, check out the only training you can prove works to do it, Atana.com. Earlier, Charles said, being vulnerable and open with your team can lead to growth and trust. Your pain, your story, your experiences have purpose. You just need to turn them loose by being vulnerable and open. Share your story with someone this week who needs it, okay? You won't regret it, I promise.